Without question, the most frightening part of the entire Torah is the curses contained in this parsha. Those horrible events that Hashem tells us will ensue if we abandon our faith in Him and our adherence to His mitzvos. Those scary heavenly declarations of the misery that will rain down upon us, how our bodies will languish, how our enemies will dominate us, how wild beasts will bereave us of our children, roads, and cities, how we will be met with sword and pestilence and sickness, how we will encounter forms of death unfathomably gruesome and ghastly, how we will eat the very flesh of our sons and daughters out of hunger, how we will be scattered amongst the nations of the world and our land will become desolate, our cities in ruin, how we will be rendered into a bunch of carcasses and heaped together into a pile to rot. Kind of scary. But what's strange is that just as the parsha is ending, it throws in something that seems to be completely unrelated to this very daunting and prophetic divine warning. Immediately after the Teichacha, the Torah discusses the laws of Erechin, which are the laws about the right each Jew has to donate his monetary value to the Beis HaMikdash. Why does the Torah place the laws of Erechin specifically here? Doesn't it kill the dramatic effect? Why would the Torah follow its thunderous and ominous admonition of serious catastrophes with the laws of Erechin, something so technical and seemingly unrelated? Perhaps the following idea can give us a clue. Out of all the many character traits that the Jewish people exhibit, the one that is perhaps the most impressive is its endurance. To be history's punching bag and live to tell the tale, to have suffered at the hands of virtually every one of history's villains and still survive it all. But more than merely surviving in the face of adversity, what sets us apart is our unique ability to actually use the pain and anguish as a springboard to catapult us forward. We don't merely stand up and limp to safety. We spring up with vigor. We jump up with tenacity. We regain our spirits and rebuild ourselves even better than before. Each tragedy we go through is transformed into new creativity. We are pummeled and terrorized, and yet we pick ourselves up, we dust ourselves off, and we find a reservoir of strength to not only move on, but to do so with robustness, to thrive and grow and soar, using the animosity around us as fuel to power the spiritual rocket ship within us. For example, following King Shlomo's death and the division of the kingdom came the towering prophets Amos and Hosea, Yeshayahu, and Yirmiyahu. After the tragic destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash came the great renewal of Torah, beginning with Yechezkel and culminating with Ezra and Nehemiah. From the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash came the explosion of Torah in the form of the Mishnah, Medrash, and Gemara. From the Crusades came the Hasidei Ashkenaz. From the horrific Spanish expulsion came the immense mystical circle of Tzfas, led by the Arizal, having ripple effects that reverberated throughout the entire Torah world. From the unspeakable Eastern European persecution came the Hasidic movement, injecting Judaism with a seemingly endless flow of passion, story, and song. From the Holocaust, the most horrid loss of Jewish life in our nation's history, came the miraculous resurrection of Torah Judaism in America and in Israel, where virtually every 15 feet is another shul, Beis Medrash, and seminary. It all begs a question. Where did that inner reservoir of fortitude and strength come from? With what energy did our parents and grandparents, after persecution of the worst degree, rise from the ashes and rebuild our communities bigger and better than before, brick by painstaking brick? The end of this parsha, says Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky, holds the answer, holds the key. immediately following the list of horrors that will barrage the Jewish people upon straying from the Jewish faith, the Torah speaks of the ability of each and every person to donate his monetary worth to the Beis HaMikdash. The placement isn't random. Nothing in the Torah is random. The juxtaposition in the Torah is telling us that the immense inner value of each and every Jew is unbreakable. And no matter how grim and gory the backdrop is, one's neshama is intrinsically holy, and no amount of persecution should ever convince us otherwise. The Torah's specific placement of the mitzvah of Erechin, which highlights the ability for each and every Jew to donate his worth to the Beis HaMikdash, is telling us that when we get kicked and burnt and stabbed and expelled, we must remember our ever-present, untouchable, glistening inner worth. We are to remember that it is not those barbaric hooligans who determine our value. It is Hashem who determines it, and in His eyes, we are all intrinsically holy. No matter how many layers of human corpses we may lay under, we must climb out and allow our holiness to shine. We are the torch of humanity, and no amount of ferocious persecution will ever dim it. If we lose sight of the immense spiritual value embedded deep inside of us, then our enemies win the war. If we keep our eyes on the potential within, we are indestructible. Every month, Jews go outside to say Kiddush Levana, the monthly sanctification of the new moon. We look at the moon and we declare that the same way the moon renews itself, so must we. We take inspiration from the change of the moon to get up and change ourselves. So the question is glaring. Just about the only thing in the entire solar system that does not change is the moon. The earth has seasons. Stars come and go. The sun is forever burning itself with more and more energy. The moon just sits there. There's no wind, there's no water, there's no life. Neil Armstrong's footprints are still there, exactly where he left them 6 decades ago. The moon doesn't actually grow larger and smaller. It merely gets blocked by the sun in increasing or decreasing degrees. But in actuality, it is nothing more than a ball of mass that just floats there. Could we have picked a worse paradigm for change in the entire galaxy? But that is precisely the point. That is precisely the point we are trying to make. Change is not about waiting for the season to pass or the climate to improve. Change is not about dreaming about different settings and scenarios more conducive to our success. Change is about changing our perspective. Change is about taking the circumstance at hand and seeing them in a different light, with a different angle. Change is ridding the habit of blaming circumstances and directing our sights on inner transformation. Hence, the moon is the perfect paradigm. It sits there. It never moves a muscle. And yet it waxes and wanes every month. How so? Because our perspective of it changes. It screams out to us that in order to grow and climb and ride the wave of life, we need to be forever enhancing ourselves, to be forever improving the quality in ourselves, to stop blaming external persons, places, and things, and start focusing on ourselves, to be forever grabbing hold of that self-replenishing reservoir of value deep inside of us and unleashing it. The Hebrew word for I is ayin. Reb Shamshon Rafal Hirsch points out that the word ayin also means spring. For having the right outlook in life can make us release a spiritual spring of potential and gush forth energies that are strong enough to survive any adversary. We go out once a month, whether in the cold or the rain, the snow or the sleet, and we dance by the light of the moon, for our nation has a spring of spiritual energy contained within our souls, and we, with the right perspective, can always tap into it. Rav Kamenetsky sums up this concept with the following story. After the Nazis invaded the small village of Kloisenberg, they began to celebrate in their usual sadistic fashion. Gathering the Jews into a center of the town, the Nazis paraded the Rebbe, Rabbi Yekusiel Yehuda Halberstam, into the middle, taunting and teasing and pulling his beard and pushing him around. The vile soldiers trained their guns on Reb Halberstam as the commander began to speak. "Tell us, Rabbi," the officer sneered. "Do you really believe that you are the chosen people?" The soldiers guarding the crowd howled in laughter. In a serene voice, the Rebbe answered loudly and clearly, "Most certainly." The officer became enraged. He lifted his rifle above his head and viciously beat the Rebbe. Swinging the rifle like a baseball bat, he repeatedly swung at the Holy Rebbe's head. As the Rebbe fell to the ground bloodied and bruised, there was a rage in the officer's voice. "Do you still think you are the chosen people?" he yelled. Once again, the Rebbe nodded his head and said, "Yes, we are." The officer became even more infuriated, kicked the Rebbe, and repeated, "You stupid Jew, you lie here on the ground, beaten and humiliated. What makes you think you are part of the chosen people?" The Rebbe looked at his family and fellow townspeople watching in horror. He turned back to face the officer. From the depths of his humiliation, covered in dust, the Rebbe replied, "As long as we are the ones getting kicked, and not the ones doing the kicking, we can call ourselves the chosen people." From the back alleyways of the destroyed city of Yerushalayim, to the ports of Spain in 1492, to the villages in Germany ransacked and torched by pogroms, from deep within forests in the middle of nowhere, to the northernmost part of freezing Siberia, from the riots to the crusades, from the cells to the dungeons, from the fires to the torture chambers, from the barracks to the ghettos, from the hidden caves to the concentration camps, from the bomb shelters to the prisons, no matter where we find ourselves at the beginning of every month, we Jews in groups large and small huddled together in the cold of the night and said, Kiddush Levana. We looked up at the moon and proclaimed, Hashem, this month we will be better. This month we will start anew. This month we will re-energize ourselves and bring a fresh perspective. And with tears in our eyes, we said, Hashem, no amount of pain and bloodshed will ever place a damper on the value we place on our holy neshamos. We will keep dancing down history's road and allow our souls to flood forth no matter the circumstances, shining ever brighter with each passing year. We look down from the moon with tears streaming down our cheeks. We limp into a small circle and we dance and we sing and we cry and we remind each other that though the exile has been long and it's been dark and dreary, if we absorb the lesson of the moon and keep the fire in our souls growing ever stronger, we will without a doubt keep on forging on.